So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
He kicked out from the Hogan leg drop. That has Hollywood stunned.
Yes. Yes, I want to use the diamond cutter. Look at Goldberg. He's ready.
He's calling for it.
This is it. This is it. Your career's on the line here. Do it. Do it. This place will erupt when he picks him up.
He's got him up.
Undefeated man in the history of this sport to ever win the world championship and have a record of 107, 108. Who cares? There's zero on the other side. We've got a new champion. Listen to this.
Welcome to Atlanta, jacking hammers and bows. Back to the Mackin' and jacking the clothes. Adolescents packing the foes.
A knock on the door.
Who is it?
I don't happen to know. The one with the flow.
Who did it?
It was me, I suppose.
Jay-Z in the rolls and looters in the cut supreme. Skating down old Nat, Gat tucked and lean.
I split your spleen. As a matter of fact, I split your team. No blood on the sneaks. Gotta keep it so my kicks is clean.
I get the cream. Cops see me flick my beans.
Welcome, everyone, to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting coming at you. From the beautiful Review Away Studios, Wei Ting, how are things?
Things are well. I'm here.
You have your Fight Network mug with some coffee.
Yeah, I do.
It's the office coffee?
Yeah, obviously, yes. It's the barista's blend from our coffee machine.
Now, what kind of blend is that? Is it a darker roast?
It's a dark flavored roast.
I hate that stuff.
Why?
I don't like the darker ones.
Really?
Yeah, I'm just not as big into them.
You're into the white roast.
I do. I'm more of a light coffee drinker. I have my Tim Hortons here just for this podcast in particular.
Okay.
Very excited. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's great. I'm very self-conscious now about this banter off the top of the show because one of our colleagues went up to me and said, "Hey, I started listening to your podcast," and he's like, "I really enjoy what you guys talk about at the beginning. It's very funny."
Oh.
And I'm like,
who is this?
This was Kitson.
Oh, Kitson.
The reason why Kitson started, he's a boxing guy here at the Fight Network, and the reason why he started listening to the podcast is because I think he asked
Oh,
you.
I broke his balls about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did he ask you?
I'm trying to remember.
He's like, "Did you watch my feature yet, John? Or did you read my articles, John, on the website?"
He gave me this article he wrote about Manny Pacquiao. He printed it out for me to read. And 2 days had gone by, and I hadn't read it. And he was like, "Still haven't read my article." And I was like, "Have you listened to one of my podcasts?" He's like, "I don't know where to get them." And I said, "FightNetwork.com."
The same place where your articles are.
Yeah.
And so he listened to a bunch, and he enjoyed it.
That's the best way, guilt people into listening.
So are you going to read one of his articles now?
I did read his article.
Oh,
it was fine. He likes to push buttons in articles.
All right, there you go. Kitson Vincent, writer on FightNetwork.com, amongst other things. So
has a striking resemblance to Craig Carton from MMA Uncensored Live.
If he shaved his head.
And put on a little weight.
Yeah, Craig Carton's not a...
He's not. I don't associate him as a... He's svelte.
I wouldn't even say he's fat. He's a well-built guy, it looks like.
Maybe. It's hard to tell.
I think
under those MMA Uncensored lights.
Yeah.
That show is so strange. They put it back to 11 p.m. last week. Did you notice that?
It just jumps everywhere. My PVR can't even catch it.
Like, it's... I feel terrible for these guys.
Yep.
Like, that's... To me, television death is when you have, like, hot potato time slots.
Oh, you just give up.
Leave it at 10.
Yeah.
What are they putting on after it? Jail?
No, Ink Master.
Jesus Christ.
Ink Master.
Like, it feels like 10 o'clock is their big time slot because it's right after Impact, and they just, like, funnel shows through it.
Ink Master is a good show, though. I like it.
Have you watched it?
I've seen.
I have never watched any shows on Spike other than wrestling and MMA.
Ink Master, like, the concept is crazy to me because here you are, you're, It's like any other competition reality show. So, you know, you have challenges. Like, design this style of tattoo, like a pin-up tattoo. And they actually do it. They put it on these people who obviously volunteer their bodies to let these guys go through a round in a game show. And I'm just like, that's insane to me. Because obviously, these guys are all very good. They're probably getting a free tattoo out of it, which, you know, could save them a lot of money. But at the same time, this is it, your body here that you're offering up for the rest of your life. And then these guys are going to judge it. And the way they judge it, they're like, this is a terrible line. You can see they point out all these mistakes in the tattoo. And I just feel so bad for the people that got these things. And you just can't help but think of all these imperfections. If I got a tattoo, I wouldn't want anybody to judge the technique. Let me assume that this is
here's everything tattoo. That's wrong with your lifelong decision.
Yeah, exactly. They showed these guys, they're supposed to create some type of a war memorial tattoo. And so they had to tattoo flags. And they had a bunch of guys just like mess up the amount of stars, the amount of stripes, and the order of the stripes on the flags. I just felt so bad for them.
Did you ever see Jackass when they did off-road tattoo with Steve-O?
Well, I did. That was funny.
That was crazy.
Yeah. The smiley face.
Have you ever thought of getting a tattoo?
No. I've thought of it. I think they look cool, but I wouldn't know what to get. And I'm a very non-committal person. I'm somebody that CM Punk feels bad for.
Because you don't have...
I'm not as passionate.
You're not. You're not entrenched in your beliefs.
Yeah.
What you feel today might be different tomorrow. Yeah. I think you are a better person because you leave yourself more open-minded to embrace change and evolve your thought.
Well, I'm assuming that...
what makes sense at 28 might be ridiculous at 58.
Yeah, but I'm assuming a lot of people who do get tattoos get over that when they, you know... They might get a tattoo about something. I don't want to speak for everybody who gets tattoos, but you might get a tattoo about something at one point, and then they leave it there, even though they might not necessarily... like CM Punk, for instance. I often think about this. I'm thinking about tattoos a lot more because of the CM Punk DVD, but like he gets tattoos that he shares with his friends. Like he and his friends, like for Lita, for instance, they all have like... both of them have the same tattoo. But like, what if you... You know, what if you stop becoming friends with this person? You're always going to have this thing there to remind you.
Yeah, it's like he's got a giant collage on his body.
Exactly, and that's what I was thinking. It's like,
you would do that. Maybe you should do that.
Well, my thinking is if I got one, I'd probably be a lot more willing to just get a whole bunch of them. Because anyway. But like, I'm thinking though, for somebody like a CM Punk, even though he might fall out of favor potentially with one of these people, it's always a reminder that you did have that time with that person. And so the rest of the whole collage reads like sort of like a story.
So you're not going to be getting a throat tattoo anytime soon.
A throat tattoo?
Sarah.
No, probably not.
Written across your esophagus.
I don't know any Sarah. I do know Sarah. It would be weird to tattoo.
Oh, that'd be really weird.
Name.
Yeah, it would be. It would be.
Yeah.
Anyway, but they're removable, as we found out with The Undertaker.
That's true, they are. Yeah.
Very painful, though. Get them in a safe spot.
Pricey, yeah.
Like what Johnny Depp did with when he had Winona Forever, and then he just got, I think he changed it to like Win Forever or something when they broke up,
That's so that's odd. What is the removal process? It's a laser.
Yeah, it's a...
Why is that painful? It burns your skin?
I've never got a tattoo removed, so I can't really speak to it, other than I remember reading something about The Undertaker getting his throat tattoo removed, and it was...
He said it was painful?
He said getting the tattoo was one of the most painful things. I would imagine maybe it's not that bad getting it removed. I don't know. I've never had a tattoo, and I've never had a tattoo removed, so maybe... Does Damien have ink? I can't even remember.
I don't know.
What a stereotype. I'm just assuming. The first guy to come to mind is Damien Abraham. He's in a punk band. He must have tattoos.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that.
Maybe Nate Milton has a tattoo.
Very possible. Are we just going to name off people we know and debate whether or not they might have
Robin tattoos? Black has tattoos.
He's
got sleeves.
He has a number of tattoos, yeah.
The sleeves look good for him.
Yeah. I think they're a good look.
If I had like the build for it, I would. I think
you have a build for it. I think skinny guys can get away with.
No,
with sleeves.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you got the drug look, the drug addict look.
I have the drug addict look. What does that mean?
I mean, you're skinny. That's all.
Skinny. All right. I've got the coke look.
You got a shaved head. You're skinny. You just need some tattoos and you'd be like total. I don't know, Kate Moss.
Yeah, great. I just could be sniffling all the time as well, and I'd have the look complete. Have you done anything fun lately, Wei?
Have I done anything fun?
How's Gordon?
Sure. My friend Gordon. I think he's doing well.
You didn't see him this past weekend?
I did. I saw him on Saturday. Oh, we went to a hookah bar for the first time.
Oh, how was that?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was cool. It was all right. We got into a big argument about marijuana.
I like the fact that you're already one step into this, and then who was pro and who was against?
Well,
or what was the argument around?
Okay, here's the thing. We I don't even know if
were you guys just like puffing away, arguing the merits of marijuana?
No, I've never been to a hookah or a shisha bar. Before, but there are actually a number of them in Toronto, and it's not even tobacco. They don't even serve tobacco. It's like flavored molasses.
Yeah,
and you just kind of smoke that, and it's really cool. The vibe is just like really chill, and it's, you know, it's a good time.
Where is this this particular?
This is up at, around like Yonge and Finch.
Oh, okay.
Your old part of town.
My old hood.
Yeah, and I don't know. We were just talking at some point, and. He was arguing like, man, this makes me really want to smoke cigarettes. And somehow that grew into a debate about the health effects of one versus the other.
Mm-hmm.
And he was claiming that marijuana is much more addictive than nicotine.
I think that's been actually debunked. Disproven.
Yeah.
The fact that there's no actual addictive nature to like THC.
Well, I don't have all the scientific information.
Nicotine is a proven addictive drug.
Right, right. But as far as I don't know what the technical definition of addiction is, but I certainly think you can grow a dependency.
A dependency, absolutely.
On
and
marijuana.
You could I guess the argument comes down to, you know, I'm sure, you know, a placebo effect is a placebo effect, but if you feel you need it, that could be classified as an addiction.
Sure.
People have addictions to many things that are non-drugs.
Yeah, yeah. And so we were just kind of arguing about that, and my friend Gordon, he just like, he can't control his volume when he talks, especially in public. It's like it got to the point where he got
shouting?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, for us it seems like shouting, but for him, it's just his normal way of talking. I think his whole family just kind of talks that loud.
They yell.
And so, like, everybody, like, the waitresses and people across the tables are just looking over, like, what's going on here? The argument was like, well, he was...
Let me guess, you were laughing as these people...
No, I wasn't laughing.
That's your reaction whenever stuff gets weird. You just laugh.
Kind of, yeah. But I wasn't exactly... So, like, I was arguing for, but in reality, I mean, he was making a lot of good points, and I was like,
Wait, you were arguing that it was addictive or was not addictive?
No. We were talking about whether or not it should be legalized. Or
oh, legalization. I gotcha.
And I was like, yes, well, it should be. And then he was like, no, I don't think it should because I don't think society necessarily needs it, is what he was saying, which I think
that's quite the statement, though, to determine what society needs and what society doesn't need.
Yeah, but that's the job of a lot of politicians, and that was just his opinion. But like I was just kind of goading him on. In fact, I felt like I was kind of playing the role of
troll.
No, not even a troll, but like I was bringing up a lot of points that I heard from other people and a lot of good points that I heard from other people. It's just, I don't know, it's a topic of interest.
What was his arguments about the harm it would bring to society?
He's saying how because marijuana is such a powerful drug, because it impairs. He says it shouldn't be allowed. It shouldn't be legalized. He says.
Does it impair?
Yeah, from my experience, yeah, it does. And it varies depending on the individual, depending on I guess the type of weed. But I certainly wouldn't want a road full of people driving stoned.
No, I wouldn't advocate that at all. I don't know. Powerful drug? I don't know. You
full
really
disclosure,
should. I've never smoked pot, and so I'm only speaking as an outsider.
And I think you really should. On air.
Maybe and we'll do it. Maybe
election night.
Maybe we won't talk about it.
Are we going to do that election show? Do you want to do it? No.
You don't. I didn't even know you wanted to do one.
We talked about it multiple times on this show.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. You got to get me up to speed. I haven't really been following
it
at all.
Come over to my house on the night of the election, and we're going to watch with our pro wrestling eyes.
You should get me up to speed on what the storylines are thus far.
Well, there's some good ones.
There's a debate. There was a big debate this past Monday night. Yeah.
Did you watch any of it? It's on YouTube.
No, I don't think so. I was busy watching the other show.
Raw.
The other debate. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting to know. Well, that's going to be coming up. It's 2 weeks until the election.
Who are you voting for?
I'm undecided right now.
Oh, really? You're actually undecided? Not that, obviously.
I think if we're going into this podcast way, we really shouldn't reveal our political leanings. We should be impartial.
So at the end of the podcast that we do, review an election?
Yeah.
No, we got to come up with something better.
Yeah.
Something, whatever. Anyway, at the end of that, we will cast our votes publicly.
Okay. As all Canadians.
Right. Sure.
All right. Monday Nitro. This is a weird one. Actually, it wasn't. I felt this was relevant going into Hell in a Cell this Sunday with Ryback taking on CM Punk in Atlanta, no less, for the WWE title. A main event, which way I think this is the most intrigued I've been in terms of the booking of a main event, going back to John Cena and Brock Lesnar from Extreme Rules. I'm more interested in this than I was for even the booking of like Lesnar-Hunter at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. I just find this a great pay-per-view. In terms of just how are they going to do this? I'm really interested in this for that one match.
I agree with you because they are in a predicament right now where their top star is injured. Now what are they going to do? Are they going to at some point they decided that the next best thing to do outside of your top star being there is to have a relative unknown. To, you know, an unproven guy, I should say. A completely unproven guy in that top spot. And, yeah, it is.
Could you have seen any other option of, talking about this
absolutely.
Sunday on the Law, of who you would have put in that spot to take on Punk?
You could have put in anybody, I thought.
A credible main event, though, that people are going to be into to the level of Ryback. I think you're going to get a decent number on Sunday of people that are interested in this. I think there's a lot of interest in this main event because of the undefeated streak, because of, I think for our kind of audience, they are very much intrigued by how you book this. I think this is the most compelling main event they've had in months.
I don't know.
I don't care so much about match quality. I'm more interested in just the finish here.
I'm looking at it from purely a standpoint of how over Ryback is. I don't think he's as over as many as you are claiming right now.
He's gotten good reactions, but you're right. It hasn't transferred over to television numbers at this point. It's not like he's a draw on TV. He's unproven on pay-per-view. But I think this is that test. I mean,
I think it's a test that's too soon.
I just don't, like, to be honest, as much as people maybe would love the match, I would not be interested in Punk and Daniel Bryan, for instance, if that was the guy they put in here. Kane? Yeah. I mean...
No, I wouldn't. I don't think I would do that.
Who would you put in there?
I don't know. I would have to think about it. Who's available?
The roster.
Yeah, I know. Who doesn't have a match?
Well, I mean, they could have change stuff around if they had to. I mean, this is your main event. If you had to break up Sheamus and Big Show, I don't know.
You could always do things. You could do like a six-man again. You could do some type of multi-man cage match. This is an interesting pay-per-view because not only have they booked themselves into a corner here without John Cena, but they booked themselves into a corner by forcing a Hell in a Cell stipulation in this. I don't know. They could have done a lot more things. They could have done a lot of different things. Whether or not they would have been better than Ryback, I'm not 100%, but I think it would have been equal. I don't think Ryback's definitely – I don't think he's your best option.
I like the idea.
Well, I'm not disinterested. I'm interested in the main event too.
Are you going to be watching on Sunday? Or are you undecided?
Is it this Sunday?
Yeah, it's a Sunday.
Oh. I'm undecided.
You're undecided.
Yeah. But I'm very curious about the result.
Mm-hmm. Well, that takes us to July the 6th of 1998. I was at a cottage during this time period. Missed this Nitro.
Wow, you
I've never watched this Nitro, actually.
You remember the exact moment.
I remember calling into Starphone and finding out that Bill Goldberg had beaten Hulk Hogan for the title. And even as a silly young 14-year-old saying, man, on free television.
This is Jolton Joe? The Jolton Joe
It would have been Jolton Joe. Yep. Norm DaCosta did it for a while, and then Jolton Joe joined him, and then Jolton Joe took over.
Gotcha. Cool.
The summer of 98, maybe you could classify this period as when WWF and WCW were at their most even playing field in terms of both companies really thriving and really succeeding at this time. I mean, WCW was kind of at the going downwards as opposed to Raw at the time, but this was certainly a reaction to the changing tide in the Monday Night Wars with Bill Goldberg, who had only debuted the prior September. And going into this show...
This was July.
This was July, yes. And going into this show, originally, they had thrown around a lot of ideas. They put tickets on sale. They immediately sold like 20,000 tickets for this show without anything announced for the show. And
well,
then,
firstly, they're running the Georgia Dome here.
For a television
show. The football stadium. And I was wondering why, but then I did some research. The Omni was where they usually ran? Is that where they usually ran?
In WCW, I mean, they used to run center stage for a lot of the Saturday night tapings.
For
the Omni was kind of more in the 80s. They would run that as well. And then Atlanta, I think this was the... It was either the first or second time they had run the Georgia Dome.
So were they running the Georgia Dome... simply because they felt like they had the house, or because they didn't have any other options? Because the Omni was demolished by this time, and I think it might have been...
No, I think that they were really hot at this point, and this was not... They were running a lot of domes at this point for Nitro. They were running, like, the TWA Dome. They were running a lot of... I think they ran the Superdome in New Orleans. They ran a lot of, like, big... Like, this was where WrestleMania was last year. Like, giant... stadiums that, I mean, WWE, even at its peak, they ran one Raw at Sky Dome.
Yep.
But other than that...
But that was more out of necessity than anything. That we didn't have the ACC back then in Canada.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, coming to Toronto, you chose to run that venue. But that being said, I mean, WCW here was just a huge live event draw at this point.
They were huge, and that's not to say they drew WrestleMania numbers. They only opened up I think they announced the 39,000, around 39,000.
Do you know what the actual attendance was?
What was the actual attendance?
Do you know this story?
No, I don't.
Well, guess what it was. They announced on TV 39,000. What do you think the actual paid attendance was?
Guessing maybe 30.
This coming courtesy of Death of WCW, always a great resource when we go back for these old WCW shows, Brian Alvarez and R.D. Reynolds. The actual attendance way, they announced, what, 39,000 and something? The actual paid attendance was 41,412.
What?
They announced a lower number. 41,000 paid, and they announced 39.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know how that happens. Like, what an accounting error there the night of the show.
They should have announced 50.
Why not? I mean, usually we always just make fun of these because they grossly inflate the number here. They were too modest. They announced below.
That is hilarious.
Wow. So anyway, going into this show, originally the idea was they were going to do Hulk Hogan and Bill Goldberg in a non-televised, non-title match. And Goldberg would pin Hogan.
Wait, a non-televised?
Yes, they weren't going to air it on Nitro. It was going to be a dark match.
Where would they air it?
For the live crowd.
Oh, for the,
they weren't going to give away the match.
Right.
Television.
Okay. What? Yeah.
And then the week before, they ended up changing their mind and putting it on television in a title match, and Hogan being put in this main event slot. And I think a lot of this was also a reaction that Raw was really starting to take over, and they wanted to throw something big on Nitro. Now, you could argue this was something too big for one night of ratings, but that was their decision. They announced it on Thunder the prior week with J.J. Dillon setting up the match.
Announced it on Thunder. They didn't even spend a whole week building this.
They probably had not decided this on the Monday prior.
Wow.
So there you go. That was their decision. And I mean...
The thing is, this was an angle. The whole point of this streak is to build up to this match. So you can argue that this was an angle that was built from 10 months out. And to cash it in on live TV with 5 days of build, it seems very silly. 4 days.
This would have been my Starrcade main event.
Sure.
The biggest show of the year.
Yeah.
This probably, if they had done it correctly for another 6 months after this, this probably could have been their most bought pay-per-view in history. I think. Mm-hmm. I feel at the time when this was so hot. Mm-hmm. And even by the end of 98, this was still a company that was very hot and was very capable of doing a monstrous number. So there you go. That was the setup to start the show. This was, of course, way the era of the three-hour Nitros. So yeah. Kind of interesting. We can talk about this at the end of the show, comparing, granted, this is a bit of an anomaly, but this three-hour show versus the three-hour shows we watch now.
Like you said, it's hard to compare this one to. This was a good show, a really stacked episode with a really hot
crowd. Show-long story to culminate at the end. And Tony Schiavone welcomes us and says, tonight is the biggest night in the history of the sport.
Yes.
No subtlety to start this one off. And the Nitro girls are in the ring, including the future Mrs. Shawn Michaels. Whisper.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of Nitro girls on this show.
Yeah. Was Paisley there? Or Charmel?
I think she was.
She
was part of this at the time. And the announcers are Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Larry Zbysko. And did you catch Larry Zbysko here?
Yeah, I did.
Talking about carbon-based life forms.
Well, I've got something to say, because the fireworks have not ended yet. Now, since the dawn of time, and carbon-based life form has pulled themselves out of that primitive puddle of slime, mankind has become the dominant creature on the planet Earth. Goldberg has proved we have reached the epitome of evolution, and tonight he gets his chance at the ultimate, the heavyweight championship of the world. I'll be right back.
This sounded absolutely nuts. I didn't know what this guy was on.
He was going on about something about the evolution of mankind and how now Bill Goldberg is here, and he is going to take the next step in human evolution by defeating Hulk Hogan.
This was not only a pro wrestling match, but also one of great scientific interest to the medical community. Bill Goldberg.
Regular Charles Darwin.
Yeah. So first off, NWO Hollywood comes out. Do you want to explain this way, this fracture of the New World Order at the time? Were you watching WCW?
No, I wasn't. I didn't watch until the finger poke of doom.
Oh, that was months later when they returned to the Georgia Dome.
Oh,
yeah, great. There you go. The NWO, everyone remembers, a very hot group. And then in the spring of 98, they decided to make two NWO groups with Hogan, Hall, Bischoff on one side as NWO Hollywood, and then kind of our babyface NWO group, the Wolfpack, with Kevin Nash, Lex Luger, Randy Savage, Conan, and Sting, which to me was a killer. We watched for like over a year this guy trying to take down the NWO, and then all of a sudden, he's part of the NWO.
Yeah, he's part of the rebel NWO.
Yeah, but as we heard multiple times on this show, the announcers stating that WCW is number three behind the NWO groups right now.
Yeah.
I was like, why are these guys not, or why specifically Sting? Because he was never part of the NWO, and that was his whole thing. He would never join the NWO.
Hey, he wouldn't join the heel NWO. This is not the NWO.
Well, why is he leaving WCW?
Okay, well, here's how I saw it from an outsider's perspective. And even though I didn't watch, I'd always...
I like that pun.
Ah, there you go, yes. even though I didn't watch, you couldn't help but kind of be exposed to it. You would go to, like, a toy store, for instance, and all of a sudden you'd see these NWO branded products, and then an NWO red and black branded product, and then there's a WCW branded product. And the way I saw it was the NWO brand was so strong and they made it so cool that WCW was just uncool by comparison. And so if they wanted a babyface team that was over, what's the best way of doing that? Put the NWO label on it, but, you know, paint it a different color.
Well, that's quite the process then you've made of making your own brand, the one that does have to last the long term. So uncool.
That was part
and,
of the problem.
You aren't wrong in that assessment. I remember from my grade 8 trip, we went to Ottawa, and me and my buddy were big wrestling fans. Like, you could not find WCW merchandise in the city. And we're going to the store, and we found an NWO shirt. We're like, holy shit, they have an NWO shirt. And I went to go buy one, and then I turned it around, and on the back, it read, Broken Bones Rule. And I was like, fuck this. I am not buying this. That is so lame.
How many back of the shirt sayings have ruined a good wrestling shirt in history?
Well, that is one of them. It's like the NWO logo was the cool part. Why are they adding this stupid thing on the back?
I don't know.
Broken Bones Rule. One of the worst slogans I've ever seen placed on a t-shirt.
Yeah, always pound an ass. See, like, the back of the shirt's slogans have not been kind.
Why would you tinker with the NWO merchandise? This was one of the hottest selling shirts in wrestling history. You got to tinker with it?
I guess somebody felt that the back was too plain. You gotta double it up.
So
you can't put another logo back there. You just come up with a saying that's somewhat relevant.
Yeah, I think that was my momentum shifter. I was like, this company is going to go out of business. The DX shirt is much more appealing than the NWO shirt now.
Oh, it said suck it on the back. That was more appealing? You would have been more likely to wear that?
I don't think I would have worn either, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah.
But it wasn't lame. You can't say that was lame. Maybe today it's lame.
Yeah.
You don't know that it said suck it. It was just there was an asterisk instead of the...
Sick it?
The supposed vowel.
Sack it?
Sick it? Sack it? Sock it?
Would that have been better? That's not lame?
Yeah, I don't know. It was left for interpretation. It was left for interpretation. You're right. It was lame. Wrestling sucks. We continue on.
It.
My favorite sign of the night. Did you catch it on the against the hard camera all night long?
Goldberg fears Milton.
My favorite sign I've ever seen on one of these shows we've gone back to.
Yeah.
I tried to see if there was a young Nathan there, but I could not tell.
Yeah.
Looked like a white gentleman, so I could not... I don't believe it was Nathan.
Time traveler. Went back in time.
Maybe.
Went to the show and held up a sign.
Maybe. If there was anyone at a WCW show in mid-98 going traveling to the Georgia Dome from Virginia, it was Nate Milton with a Goldberg Fears Milton sign.
That is true.
If it was Goldberg Fears Brother Milton, that would have been something.
Mm, yeah.
So they bring up the fact that Bash at the Beach is this Sunday. I was like, holy Christ, this is the show going into a pay-per-view. This is crazy.
Yeah.
This was probably the biggest week of WCW's peak. I think you could honestly isolate this. Bash at the Beach show did gigantic business.
And what was the main event on that?
That was DDP and Karl Malone against Dennis Rodman and Hulk Hogan coming off of the NBA Finals with the Bulls beating the Utah Jazz.
For a second year in a row.
Yep. You had so much publicity for this. There was a Nitro where Rodman showed up and skipped the Bulls practice, and it got tons of coverage. The fact that he skipped out on a practice to go to a wrestling event. Mm-hmm. I mean, this got so much publicity, and there was an incident involving Malone and Rodman in the finals. I mean, you could not have capitalized on this more.
Yeah, yeah. But all the more...
I would say this got more attention than Tyson earlier that year going into WrestleMania. I know history, you look at Tyson as gigantic, and it was for the mm-hmm. WWF, but living in this time period, that Malone-Rodman thing, they just like struck gold.
But all the more perplexing that they would do something so big on the go-home show leading into that main event to really, in my opinion, take away the attention away from that main event.
Well, I think they did put a lot of focus on this main event for the Sunday, but I feel you could have had, instead of a big rating and a gigantic pay-per-view, you could have had two giant pay-per-views and spread them out a bit more. There was... Really, in hindsight, there was no need to do this for one night.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy. So anyway, they talk about the fact that Karl Malone and Dennis Rodman will be here tonight. Hogan says that Malone is never going to play basketball again after this Sunday, and that the Goldberg match is not happening because he's only beaten jabronis, and Bill Goldberg is not at his level. WCW has paid him enough and says he has a brother making his return tonight, and he's going to take out Goldberg.
Yeah.
Goldberg. Crowd is all chanting Goldberg. Really great atmosphere here.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends with Bischoff thanking everyone and says, "We love you all, except you. You can bite me." pointing at someone in the crowd. So that was our opening segment.
That was the
Hollywood version of the NWO.
Yeah, Hogan basically putting an obstacle in front of Goldberg before he could face him. Who would be this? Who would this brother be?
Brother Nate?
No.
There's a bunch of fans interviewed outside. They interviewed this one guy who sounded like a miniature version of Steve Mongo McMichael, who actually cut a great promo.
Yeah,
here.
He did.
It's like, it's not 1985 at Madison Square Garden any longer. It's 1998. This was great. This guy's a better promo than Bill Goldberg, 100%.
I agree.
Hogan, his streak started in 1985 in Madison Square Garden. Well, let me tell you, this ain't Madison Square Garden, and it ain't 1985. This is 1998, baby. Let me tell you.
One of the best fan interviews I've seen in a long, long time. Mm. We had a Hogan ad promoting his t-shirt.
Yes, commercial done NWO style.
Yes.
Black and white.
Very edgy.
Yeah.
I get the feeling you're... What are your thoughts just watching this? This overall 1998 Nitro product.
I really enjoyed it.
Do you like the look, the feel of the show?
Yeah, it looked like a real...
You contrast it to today's production values.
Well, what are we comparing it to, WWE or TNA?
To Raw.
Okay.
I think this is a much better comparison.
Raw is better, but this crowd was just so hot. This crowd was just, you had 39,000 people, and they were hot throughout the entire show. For minor things like squash matches, just because they got to see Sting, just because they got to see Bill Goldberg, and so I don't think you can compare that in terms of TV production. This is good. This is top notch professional Turner produced show.
Gene Okerlund is with Brian Murphy from NASCAR.
And wait. Is this guy a driver?
I have no clue. I thought maybe he won a car. Maybe not a NASCAR driver.
I think he just won a NASCAR the previous year when they did this giveaway.
Well, he's from Arkansas, and WWE's giving away another car.
It's a pretty cool prize.
That's awesome. What are you going to do with that?
You can't do anything. I don't think they're street legal.
It's going to take up a spot in your garage, I guess.
You could sell it. You probably make a good chunk of change.
Yeah,
it's
I guess
like that in your house giveaway.
Yeah. Well, there was no further update on this. I guess they weren't giving away this car on this show. Future contest.
Yeah, future contest.
Our first matchup of the night: television champion Booker T defending the title against Dean Malenko. And match starts off. Malenko delivers a drop toe hold, but Booker gets up and suplexes Malenko. Then misses with a missile drop kick off the top rope. Malenko gets up, goes for the clover leaf, and Booker hits a small package for a two count. Then Malenko jumps off the turnbuckle and gets caught, takes a slam, and the two end up on the floor as Chris Jericho, who is the Cruiserweight champion at the time, he comes out from the entrance on the microphone, and he cuts this promo. It sounded like the microphone was off here at one point. They, cut in, to zoom in on him.
I didn't notice. I heard the promo.
And he challenges Dean Malenko, who is distracted, and takes an axe kick from Booker. And Booker gets the win at 3:43 as Jericho laughs and celebrates. And that would play into a later segment as Jericho and Malenko were scheduled to face off at the Bash at the Beach show later that weekend.
This was only about 3 minutes, but for a three-minute match, this was, I thought, about as good as you could get Dean Malenko here. It's obviously, it's always a pleasure to watch Dean Malenko wrestle on these podcasts, and there wasn't much special here, but I thought these two, Malenko was great, and Booker T more than held his own.
Then we went to some crowd shots, including a drunk fan in a Coca-Cola t-shirt shadow boxing like a maniac, which someone put a screen grab up on our message board. Yeah. This kid was nuts.
That's funny.
They show Goldberg doing push-ups on a bunch of chairs in the back throughout the night. Then Karl Malone has a pre-taped promo saying that he and DDP drove all the way from Utah and Dennis Rodman didn't show up. He didn't show up.
Oh,
at Nitro.
Is that a play on the practice? Missing the...
No, I think he just legit didn't show up to this Nitro. He was scheduled to be here on the go-home show.
I will say, not having seen any of this before, but knowing Karl Malone from basketball.
The mailman.
It was bizarre to watch this wrestling show and all of a sudden have Karl Malone cut a pro wrestling promo in front of me.
I enjoyed Karl Malone on this show. What it's a... Just,
Dennis Rodman, I totally understand the man's a personality, but you have Karl Malone? Like,
he's a big wrestling fan.
I know he's a big wrestling fan. Yeah, that I could assume. But when I think of pro athlete, like a pro athlete personality, I think of Karl Malone. But, you know, he did a good job. He did. It was, I got a real kick out of seeing this sports celebrity, this multimillionaire sports celebrity play pro wrestler.
Yeah, well, he played pro wrestler all night long here on the show. And our next match, Raven comes out with Lodi. You remember Lodi?
Yes, I do.
The guy who held up signs, including, "Where is Niagara Falls?" It was one of his signs he had tonight.
What's the joke there?
He doesn't know where Niagara Falls is, I guess.
Well, it's got to be a reference.
Taking on Chris Kanyon. And Kanyon attacks him on the floor.
A freshly unmasked Chris Kanyon.
Yes, the former Mortis.
Yeah.
And Kanyon attacks him on the floor, hits a swinging neck breaker in the ring, and then they go back to the floor fighting, and Kanyon drops Raven front first onto the chair in the ring, as this is a Raven's rules match, which means no DQ. Kanyon gets on top.
Remember that.
Raven's rules. Yeah.
No DQ.
It's Raven's rules. Come on, everyone knows that. Kanyon gets onto the top rope while he places a chair on top of Raven, but then Lodi crotches him, and Raven superplexes Kanyon onto the chair, which is in the upright position.
Insane.
Crazy bump. Yeah. Really dumb bump.
For a
3-minute Nitro match.
Yeah.
Yeah, really nuts.
But this was at a time when hardcore, I think, was still a novelty in 1998. And I'm not excusing it at all. I still think it's stupid. And this is part of the reason why... hardcore has become such an old cliche at this point. It's because of throwaway spots like these.
So after free reign on the rules, Saturn runs in for the disqualification at 3:12.
Yeah, what the hell happened to Raven's rules?
I don't know. I guess Raven stopped ruling this match, and Saturn attacked Raven, Lodi. Then he knocks out
Kanyon. No, he didn't. Oh, did he attack Lodi? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he attacked all of them.
And he attacked Kanyon, who the announcers inform us was his tag team partner.
I don't know if this was a mistake or what.
I don't know either, because the announcers didn't seem to have any explanation for why Saturn attacked his own tag team partner. He lifted him up, and he delivered like a DVD.
Saturn then gets a table from underneath the ring. He puts Raven on the table on the floor, climbs to the top for a splash, but the table does not break.
No, poor guys.
No, these WCW tables.
Yeah.
And Kanyon then lays out Saturn, and the announcers play up the fact that they don't know if he realizes who he attacked.
They're just blindly lifting guys up for wrestling.
How is Kanyon blinded here? Blinded by a sneak attack?
He's groggy. I guess so. Anything can happen.
So this was quite the train wreck. So we move on. A limo shows outside, and a woman gets out, and the announcers are like, "Who is that?" I was like, "Oh, God, I recognized who this was." And then Tony Schiavone, "Well, that's a wheelchair. That's a wheelchair." And Buff Bagwell is helped out of the limo by his mother, Judy Bagwell, of WCW 2000 fame, and is helped out and wheeled into the arena. This was coming off an incident earlier that spring where Buff Bagwell legitimately broke his neck during a spot with Rick Steiner, where he delivered a bulldog off the second rope and Bagwell's head slipped out. I remember watching this live on TBS, and the whole show had to basically come to a stop as they helped him out. And a really scary situation on television involving Buff Bagwell. So this was his first appearance since that injury took place. We had more Nitro girls dancing, and then they plug the Nitro parties, where you can send in a VHS tape of your party, and then they could you could have a Nitro party hosted at your place. We would have totally been able to enter this if we were around in 1998. A Nitro party.
You mean you and I?
Yeah.
Like, if we were doing this podcast?
Oh, yeah. We'd have a big party.
Yeah, of two.
Yep.
Do people
send in your VHS? Like, literally, you got to record this on your camcorder. Yep. Then you got to put a VHS and mail it. Snail mail.
Yeah.
My God. Why doesn't Rod do these? They could easily just upload a YouTube video, a tout
of
your Raw party.
I don't think people have Raw parties anymore.
Well, this would encourage Raw parties. You're telling me that there's not people out there that would have Raw parties if they were encouraged to do so?
I think
and have the chance to have the three-man band come attend your party?
I think the typical Raw viewer is watching...
By himself?
By himself in their mom's basement and not wanting to let anybody know that they're watching.
Well, you certainly have a low expectation of the wrestling fan of 2012. Impact parties.
Yeah, impact party. I don't know many people who still have parties surrounding pro wrestling.
Did you ever get together with your friends? Was there ever a period?
For pay-per-views, yeah. Yeah.
I think everyone went through that. I used to do that.
Well, for pay-per-views it makes sense. You can all pitch in together and you know, they're usually bigger events worthy of having a party, a get together. But for Raw Nitro Raw at this point, come to my house. Watch a 3-hour Raw. Let's have a 3-hour Raw party. I don't know.
Before the DVR era.
Yeah.
Watching these live. I thought this was a great marketing idea, but WCW had some great ideas at this time. These Nitro parties, I mean, they existed. People had them.
You had them.
No, because I didn't get Nitro, so I couldn't watch it.
Did you have Raw parties?
No, I didn't. I don't think it even aired live at this point in time, in mid-98.
It would have been so great to if you record one of these entries. Even though you didn't win, I would have loved to have seen your entry to the Nitro party contest.
We should encourage people to have review away listening parties.
Oh, okay.
People have their iPods on and they're all in a big group.
In a room together?
With beers and...
yeah, shh, don't.
At a hookah lounge?
Yeah, no talking. Yeah.
Just silence. Yeah. The occasional laugh, maybe. DDP and Karl Malone are... First we got a recap of Malone and DDP. They drove from Utah in an 18-wheeler. This looked like the most inconvenient mode of transportation.
They're expensive.
Why would you need an 18-wheeler to travel this far? Are you bringing, like, the entire rigging system for the Nitro production set? I wonder if that's what they took. This was just like the road crew driving during the day, and they just took an aerial shot of it and said that Malone and DDP were in this giant 18-wheeler. That seems more logical.
Pretty likely. I don't think Malone and DDP are driving themselves.
Anyway, then they show the NWO with a bunch of bats getting ready for Malone and DDP to arrive. And that was that.
They recapped the last week's segment with a standoff between Malone and Hogan.
Right, where Malone and DDP ended up double-teaming Hogan to a big, big pop.
It was actually mostly Karl Malone taking out Hulk Hogan by himself via body slam.
Clothesline.
Yeah. Which, to me, I understand why you would do the celebrity deals, but there's nothing more exposes the business than to have your champion be taken out via clothesline and body slam from a fucking NBA player.
In fairness, a month after this, Hogan would be selling for Jay Leno. So by comparison, I'd much rather your world champion be selling for a legitimate athlete than Jay Leno. That a lot of people thought that was the low point of wrestling. Like workers would talk about the fact that killed the business. Yeah. Hogan selling like an arm, a fucking like arm lock from Jay Leno. Anyway, we go to a taped segment with Steve. First DDP and Karl Malone come out for an interview with Gene Okerlund in the ring. They say that this will be the worst week of Hulk Hogan's life. Not true.
No,
not true. Malone says he's going to whip Rodman. Like Madonna should have. And DDP is just in stunned shock. You did not just say that.
No, you didn't.
And says, on Sunday, I'm going to be the Rodzilla killer. I loved Malone's delivery.
Yeah,
it was so cardboard, but so great.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the best I can describe it.
Rodzilla. I'm going to whip you like Madonna should have whipped.
Hold on.
No, I'm serious. I'm going to knock the paint right out of your hair, boy.
Sounds like you're going to be a killer come Bash at the Beach.
No, a Rodzilla killer.
It's It's like, I'm going to dare you. Let's play truth or dare, and I dare you to write, to read out loud whatever I write on this piece of paper. And that's what Carl Malone had to do on live TV.
Then we had our taped segment with Steve McMichael discussing his time with the Horsemen and compares it to when he played for the Chicago Bears. And we got comments from Mike Ditka.
What was I watching? Was this Sports Center all of a sudden?
Oh, it's a profile piece.
Yeah, but basketball players, and then this all your whole roster.
NASCAR.
NASCAR is your whole roster full of like sports celebrities.
Man, this was a wide appealing. I didn't mind this piece at all.
I thought this was good. I thought Mongo was a very good promo.
Oh, Mongo was, commentary was not his forte, but he was a fine talker.
Yeah.
Commentary, he kind of reinvented the English language. And anyway, this was designed as like a plea with Steve McMichael and Benoit kind of urging Arn Anderson to reform the Horsemen. And this would build for months leading up to one of the most memorable segments in Nitro history later in September. This was at the point where Ric Flair had been sent home and they were at a real big legal impasse. And no one knew if Ric Flair would even return at this point. So we then go to my main event of the show. Scotty Riggs comes out and his opponent, Way. Dun, dun, dun.
Scott Putski.
I was so excited.
You texted me earlier in the week, and you texted like 4300. And I was like, what? I wasn't watching the show, but then I saw this, and like, holy shit.
Scott Putski
making an unexpected return to review Away.
And Larry Zbysko talks about the fact that I knew his father, and he has a lot of potential. And he had these weird tights, Way, with all these crosses and wings over them. He had like this weird, I don't know what his idea was.
Angels here. And
yeah, all this religious? Like hippie trippy shit.
Okay.
I don't know. Scott Putski not looking Scott Putski level, I thought. He really set the bar high with Ground Zero and his physique.
No, he looked pretty good. Pretty Scott Putski-like.
I didn't think he looked as...
Maybe didn't have as much of a tan or wasn't as oiled.
I would argue I can't even give Scott Putski the Scott Putski Award on this show.
Really? Who would you give it to?
Luger did make an appearance. Luger is his chief rival.
Luger was wearing a shirt.
Still, it gleamed through.
Okay.
Who would you... Well, let's do this at the end of the show. Let's give out... I think for this show, we have to.
Scott Putski is here to reclaim his title.
He's just like, I'm still around here, guys. I was very excited. That I had no idea this man was on the show.
Yeah.
Of course, he did have a brief WCW run, but this the second show ever in our three-year history that we've reviewed a show with Scott Putski, going back to show number one.
My Facebook
friend.
The
man who started it off.
My Facebook friend, Scott Putski.
Oh, yeah. You guys are friends.
Well, we're Facebook friends.
Oh, you're real friends. You should message him.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Ask him, what was his diet like in July of
98? No. And now you're going to get a bunch of listeners who are going to bombard him with messages. So let's don't do that. Don't harass this man.
Scotty Riggs, in comparison, was wearing short, black, cut-off jeans, which I guess was the in thing in 98.
Black cut-off jeans? Jean shorts?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was. I remember.
Cut-off jorts.
I remember back in 98, all the kids in my school were wearing black cut-off jeans.
Are you being sarcastic?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, jean shorts had its time in the cut-off jean shorts. I just thought it was a terrible look for people.
Well, I never owned a pair, so I can't speak for that.
Riggs drops him on the top rope, throat first, and then hits a running knee in the corner and sends him to the floor. Clotheslines him off the apron. Both go for a cross-body attempt in mid-ring, and then Putski starts his comeback, hits the Polish hammer, which like was an axe handle to the chest.
His father's finisher.
Yep.
Which got no reaction.
Not at all. Not at all. Not a lot of Ivan Putski fans in the crowd. Then he takes a jawbreaker and counters a standing crossface and runs Riggs into the turnbuckle and hits his sit-out powerbomb called the Putski Bomb for the win at 4 minutes and 16 seconds.
He won. I couldn't believe it. Not only did he appear on this podcast, on Nitro, on perhaps arguably one of the biggest Nitros in their history, he gets a win.
So he avenges that knee injury count-out loss from Ground Zero with a win on the July 6th, 98 edition of Nitro.
We kid, but this was probably, in all honesty, one of the biggest wins of his career.
Or Scotty Riggs.
Did he ever appear on Nitro even after this? Did he even appear on W?
He had one of those. I mean, so many guys were under contract at WCW at this point. A lot of them got just thrown onto Saturday night. I'm sure he made lots of Nitro appearances.
Did he ever win on Nitro?
I can't confirm he did. I cannot confirm that. Goldberg is acting crazy in the back, just hitting stuff and grunting. And then Scott Hall arrives with NWO Hollywood and says, "You can't have a party without me." And he's going to take Goldberg to school. And you want to know a weird thing that happened to me? Yeah. I watched this past Saturday, and I was like, I wonder how old Scott Hall is right now. So I looked up Scott Hall on Wikipedia, and Saturday, when I was watching this, was October the 20th, and that was his birthday.
Oh,
isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's weird.
Kind of weird. Of all the people on the show, he was the one I was like, I wonder how old he is. And he turned 54 on Saturday. Wow. And then I tweeted out, Scott Hall turns 54 today. And got some very mean responses from people.
Why?
Can't believe he made it.
Oh.
The day isn't over yet.
Jesus,
come on, guys.
That's terrible.
Chris Jericho comes out, and J.J. Dillon's in the ring. J.J. Dillon tells Jericho...
I'm just laughing about these tweets. These fuckers.
It's not nice. I don't want to make light of it. J.J. Dillon says, Chris, bringing midgets out that are mocking other wrestlers is not going to fly.
I didn't see that. Did you see that?
I didn't.
Skit?
No. Nitro was tough to follow in Canada, especially in these parts here. I mean, it had moved to 3 hours earlier in 98. It would air sporadically on TSN before it got that kind of home spot on Wednesdays. But it was tough. You had to really do some work in Canada to follow the WCW product. So there's lots of stuff that... kind of pre-98, it was really tough to catch stuff like obscure angles like Rey Mysterio midgets being brought out. Anyway, he's got a match with Ultimo Dragon tonight, and then Dean Malenko runs in. J.J. Dillon says they cannot have any physical contact until Sunday or they will be disqualified. Jericho calls him a crazy man, and Jericho then tells Dean, "Your mom wears army boots." This was supposed to provoke physical retaliation from Dean Malenko, who amazingly stood his ground here about what foot attire his mother decided to leave the house with.
What does that mean?
Your mom wears army boots.
Yeah.
Then said, you're a talentless jobber. And then tells a dead dad joke about his father, Boris Malenko. And Dillon is playing the mediator here. And then Jericho cuts a promo on how your father was always on the road, and stating why he and his brother don't seem to look alike. And this prompts Dean to attack him and stomp him, and they brawl, and they continue as they go to break. And this was, I guess Dean Malenko lost his Cruiserweight title shot here.
I thought this segment was really good. I thought everybody played a very good role. Jericho, of course, was great, being that, you know, the immature prankster. And Dillon was good delivering all the information. And I thought for Dean Malenko, this was the perfect role for him. All he had to do was look stoic, look pissed, and he did a great job of it. I think he's the perfect type of guy for something like this. And his explosion at the end was really good. Really well done, I thought.
This was this whole heel run for Jericho really was what kind of broke him out of that cruiserweight pack. At the same time, I enjoyed this stuff, but I'm really glad Jericho evolved past some of this stuff. Like, I just found some of his heel stuff was really good, like the conspiracy theory stuff. And then other parts of it, it was just like too goofy heel for me. That I'm glad, you know, he had this part of his career, but he eventually evolved past it. Chris Jericho against Ultimo Dragon. For longtime fans of both of these two, these two had some classic matches together back in Wrestling and Romance. There was a... lots of wrestling and little romance between these two, but we can romanticize about their past matches.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Anyway, because of all this backstory and the history and the fact you have a 3-hour Nitro, they gave these two an unbelievable 2 minutes and 13 seconds. We saw Dragon do his headstand on the top turnbuckle. Always an impressive spot. People always oohed and awed at when he would do. And then Jericho comes back with a vertical suplex, and then Dean runs in to attack Jericho for the DQ at 2 minutes and 13 seconds. Dragon simply leaves and lets Dean attack him. Actually tore part of like Jericho's like hair out here. Mm-hmm. They showed on the mat.
Yeah.
And then security handcuffs Dean Malenko and arrests him for a run-in.
I don't know if they they're able to. It must have been worked to tear a guy's strand of the guy's hair out.
I don't know. Maybe he had like extensions or something. I don't know.
I don't think it would have extensions.
Yeah, who knows? It's hard to grow your hair out.
Is it?
I think so.
Don't you just wait?
Yeah, but you're on television. You can't have patience while that, yeah, that in between time.
He's had long hair for most of his adult life.
Maybe it's not real. Maybe he always has the hair he has now.
Okay.
Maybe it was always that length. And he's just really good at disguising it. Anyway, we've got Bobby Heenan joins the announce team like midway through the show to tag out Larry Zbysko. Who'd you prefer, Heenan or Zbysko as the third man? What was your favorite three-man combination of these four?
I liked Heenan because he was more entertaining, but Heenan was a lot more distracting at the same time. He just employed a lot of more comedy in places where comedy wasn't necessary, and he was poking fun of a lot of guys, and that was a problem. But I found it entertaining, so I personally prefer Heenan.
He certainly had his nights where it was simply on autopilot, but he was someone that you could see was really behind the whole Goldberg thing, and on this night, he was extremely motivated for the Goldberg stuff, and I thought he was one of the highlights of really putting over Goldberg. But unfortunately, that was not always the case with Bobby Heenan in 98 onwards. Johnny Swinger comes out. And
what is he wearing? He's wearing these, like, they're like buttless chaps, but he wore them on his sleeves. On his arms instead.
There was a lot of male stripper influence on some of these performers. The black cutoff jeans, the assless chaps. Maybe they were appealing to a wide demographic, I guess, at this point. So, anyway, Johnny Swinger comes out, and they showed this kid just acting nuts in the front row. And he gets on the microphone and was given the absolute worst opening question for a guy making the transition from WCW Saturday Night to Nitro. Do you know who I am? This was like one of my favorite law liners was Vito. Yo, you know who this is? The answer for a lot of people is no. And he went on in his liner, and no one knew who he was. Anyway, crowd did not know who this was. Says that he is the hottest young commodity in WCW. And then Chavo Guerrero comes out again in like YMCA, very themed attire here, wearing a hard hat and had clippers.
What was this?
I don't know why he was wearing a hard hat. I can't. He was kind of turning heel at this point and playing this crazy gimmick.
They were working some type of a hair angle where I guess in the previous
Chavo
week,
started cutting people's hair.
In the previous week, Eddie had taken off a bit of Chavo's hair. Is
yes.
that the thing?
And we were leading up to Chavo versus Eddie that Sunday at Bash at the Beach. So we got Johnny Swinger and Chavo. This is where they announced the attendance of 39,919. A low estimate.
Yeah.
And we had a hip toss by Johnny Swinger, and then he starts dancing as Guerrero goes for a roll-up. And Guerrero just comes back and hits a tornado DDT and beats the hottest young commodity in 157. And Heenan basically, he says, so much for your hottest commodity.
Mm.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome use of this man. Guerrero gets on the mic and says, Johnny Swinger has some split ends. And he has a bunch of, he has his scissors and he starts cutting his hair. And then he challenges Eddie to a hair versus hair match at the pay-per-view. And I guess this was agreed to upon by Eddie.
Who didn't make an appearance?
No appearance on this show. Then they show a highlight of when Goldberg went to 25-0 defeating Glacier.
And what
in
happened
Baltimore?
What happened in that match? The hair versus hair match.
Chavo lost, and then Chavo cut his own hair to act crazy.
He cut his own hair, okay.
Yeah.
And just grew back.
Yeah, I guess so.
Cool.
Goldberg is warming up in the locker room. Then Disco Inferno comes out, followed by Alex Wright and Tokyo Magnum.
Tokyo Magnum.
Another stripper gimmick.
Another stripper. One of Ultimo Dragon's pupils.
Yep. And we had Disco Inferno and Alex Wright were known as the Dancing Fools at this point.
And Magnum Tokyo, or Tokyo Magnum, he is somebody who wants to join the Dancing Fools. He's the lackey of the lackeys.
Yes. And they took on Public Enemy, who came out wearing Atlanta Braves jerseys. The heels backdropped them and got sent to the floor. Wright hit a scoop slam to Johnny Grunge and splashes him over the top rope. Disco then comes in, misses an elbow drop off the second turnbuckle. Then Rocco Rock is in with Alex Wright, clotheslines Rocco Rock. Then Grunge came in with a double bulldog. This went like an eternity by Nitro standards on this show. They had two tables on the floor, and Alex Wright is set up on the table. Magnum Tokyo helps him off, and then Public Enemy grabs Tokyo. They stack the tables, put him on top, and Rocco Rock rotates forward off the top rope with Johnny Grunge launching him, putting Magnum Tokyo through the table. And then Wright and Disco run in with trash can lids and a trash can, attack them for yet another DQ at 5 minutes and 3 seconds. If you can't do a clean finish with these four, you have some problems. I was getting a little sick of the DQs by this point. This was like number three at this point.
But for a match like this, did it matter who won? Did it
matter who got the clean exactly. Win? Just give us a finish.
Well, my point is, it didn't matter either way. And
you do a DQ, you automatically tell the fans you're going to get a negative reaction.
No, I disagree. Because the point of this match, this Public Enemy Dancing Fools matchup, it was a little bit of comedy. More importantly, it was just to send a guy through two stacked tables. That was all they were there for. It's like, they have a purpose on this show, on this card, and it is to put Magnum Tokyo through two tables. The fans got that. It was entertaining. It was fun. That's it. You know, who cares who wins? You're not going to remember.
If they do this enough times, they're going to go out of business. Gene Okerlund welcomes out Buff Bagwell. As we mentioned, the first time since he had broken his neck. And Heenan asks, is that his date? And I think Schiavone did not want comedy as part of this segment and cut off Heenan, informing it's Judy Bagwell, his mother.
That was actually Gene. Gene.
Oh, right, because he could hear them in his earpiece. You're right. And Bagwell explains that he had his C7 and C4 vertebrae fractured. He almost died twice while he was in intensive care. And got a huge reaction here, just outside of his hometown.
A complete babyface promo.
Which was the way to do it, and the way they would not follow through with this guy.
Wait a second, though. He turned back heel after this, but
yes.
How long after this did he actually come back?
When he wrestled?
Yeah.
He wrestled later in the fall.
They did
a whole deal where Steiner like attacked him in the wheelchair, and then Bagwell turned heel, like getting up from his wheelchair. I can't remember all the sequence of it, but they did this, and he was like really over, as you can tell, as a baby face after he had all this sympathy. Then he like turned, then he did the baby face turn, apologizing, and then like turned again, and they did all this flip flopping. This to me was the only window of opportunity for Bagwell to get over, and they just ruined it.
Right.
They ruined it with Bagwell. And maybe he wouldn't have been a big star at the end of it, but nonetheless, they squandered this. Like, just horrendously bad.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the segment, how well it came across. I mean, he cut the most incredible babyface promo about Atlanta, about the fact that him and Steiner have just gone separate ways, thanking his mother for helping him through all this. It was a great promo.
But this was a promo, while watching it, this was a babyface promo that I felt was used to set up a heel turn. This felt like this guy was too over the top in thanking the fans. Every question, whether or not he was being asked about the fans or not, he would end with, I just love all of you so much. This woman behind me, the show will, Ted Turner will lose money because I'm going to go over 3 hours and talking about how much I love this woman. It was just so much, and I thought it was so good as a heel babyface promo, like a babyface promo done to set up a heel turn.
Maybe Jesse Sorensen's gonna come back as a heel. and join Zima Ion.
It certainly would be. I'm not saying that this was the right move done whatsoever. But if that was the intent, to set up a heel turn to get the crowd on your side before the swerve, I thought he did a very good job. He just has like a douchebag look about him.
He does.
The pencil line goatee.
Again, another guy who a former male dancer.
Yeah.
The takeaway from this for me is the fact that just months after this promo, Judy Bagwell would be tag team champions with the man who broke her son's neck, Rick Steiner.
Oh, my God. There's a show we have to review.
We did review the Halloween Havoc, which featured the Chucky storyline culmination. There was some horrendous stuff to come in 1998 for WCW.
I don't remember this.
You don't remember Chucky? The promo with Rick Steiner where Chucky was just like... you got to just YouTube it. Just type in like Rick Steiner, Chucky.
I should listen to the podcast.
Yeah, okay. You should listen to yourself talk about it.
I don't remember that at all.
This to me is like the fall of 98 to me was really where shit just fell apart for this company. You could argue this was really the climax of WCW was this night. This really was. And then the fall of 98 was brutal. And then we had that horrendous January 4th, 99 show, which was the complete momentum shifter. So some interesting shows here that we have reviewed.
Which you can all check out in chronological order.
Zam!
Thanks to, I'm so sorry, I'm forgetting the name of,
Let's get this
Let's
right.
Let's do it. This man deserves credit.
I have a hard time remembering usernames and real names.
Yeah, yeah. But one of our listeners went through the trouble of organizing all of our previous podcasts in chronological order of events. So you can check out everything. If you listen to this podcast, you can follow it up with the next podcast.
Yeah, it's very cool. In terms of if you just
go to the bottom here.
Well,
there's nothing there. Sorry. I'm at it.
The very bottom.
Gonzo.
Gonzo, yes, yeah. Gonzo.
So it's got it all in chronological order. So if you're having one of those 1998 kind of days.
What is the podcast that directly follows this? July of 1998.
Road Wild 98, which took place. It was the pay-per-view right after featuring Jay Leno teaming with DDP against Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff.
Well, there you go. Lawradio.proboards.com.
And then you have Halloween Havoc 98, as we just mentioned. So
what a great experience. I would actually be curious to see what the banter sounds like. If you're jumping from one podcast to another where we just talk about completely random
It's a
things.
Whole brand new spectrum of fact-checking that you can do on me.
Right.
All these old shows. So there you go. Thank you very much to Gonzo and our boy Louie as well.
Yeah,
maintaining that.
Oh,
that
and anybody who
massive thread
who contributes to the message board.
Yeah, all of you, most of you, I like most of them. My goal is to hit -100 on my karma by the end of the year. I think I can do it.
All right.
I think it's a very good goal. Very offended.
Yeah.
Very offended. What are you at? What's your karma?
I don't know.
I bet you're very high.
I don't pay attention to it.
Okay, then another video. These were smart, I thought, there with Goldberg. All his historical wins. This was when the streak was still legit, and they didn't just magically add numbers to it.
Historical wins, like his win here against
number 50,
Ric Fuller,
one of the largest men in WCW.
Yeah,
in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. So there you go.
Yeah, and then these are good. This is what they should be doing with Ryback. Although you can't,
historic wins though.
And Stan Stansky.
Oh, he was one of the historic ones, I think. So you have to put Stan Stansky in there.
Well, we'll talk about it a bit more, but that's one of the problems I see with this Ryback thing. The streak is not nearly as important as this was for
Goldberg. Well, I think the fact was if they were to add a number to Ryback, I think you would only enhance the Goldberg comparisons.
Not even the number, but just the caliber of opponents that he's had.
Well,
who's he beaten?
He's beaten some guys.
Jinder Mahal? Well, The Miz?
You also don't have the depth. Look at this roster. Yeah. WCW at the point.
Oh, you had Ric Fuller. Come on.
Well, I mean, yes, you had your bottom guys. But my God, this was so much of a three-hour show. This to me, and granted, again, this is really an aberration in terms of the rank and file 3-hour Nitro, but you had so many more stars on this edition of Nitro.
But I suppose for me, the illusion that he's even had that big of a streak is not even there yet.
No, I think it's more just he kills guys rather than a streak that they haven't pushed a streak, really. Just he kills guys quickly. So they head into hour number three, and we start off the third hour with Bill Goldberg against Scott Hall for the United States title. And this was great because he does his entrance, crowd was super hot, and Schiavone notes, well, the referee held up the U.S. title, so I assume it's a title match.
Yeah.
Great communication. Mm-hmm. Hall takes a bump to a massive roar. This crowd was into anything Bill Goldberg did. He could do no wrong. And believe me, Goldberg would test that here after he reversed an Irish whip and Hall just wiped out. It was a horrendous spot these two had. Terrible. Just terrible here. Crowd didn't give a fuck.
They didn't care.
Whatever.
You can screw up as much as you want.
We don't care, Bill. And Goldberg blocks a scoop slam, slams Hall. Hall misses in the corner and then takes a backdrop suplex for a one count. And Goldberg no-sells the shots from Hall as he gets to his feet. Judo tosses Scott Hall and then hits an arm drag, which Schiavone says, a new twist to his repertoire. An arm drag. And Hall goes to the floor, waves
literally.
Down. Yeah. Waves down the New World Order. But DDP and Malone stop the NWO members with chairs. And Hall drops Goldberg throat first on the top rope, clotheslines him, goes for the outsider edge. But Goldberg counters with a back body drop, spears Hall, and hits the jackhammer for the win. 5 minutes and 57 seconds for a massive pop here. And it sets up the main event for later in the night with Goldberg going to 107-0.
Crowd just loved this.
This was crazy.
This was this was like, you know, pay-per-view WrestleMania level heat, I'd say.
This
is
huge.
Show, you know, with a guy that was just, you can debate all you want about this, you know, whether or not he had the skills to be champion, but in terms of the timing of it, absolutely, this was the time. This guy was the top star in your company.
That's to me, when you have like visual evidence such as like this Georgia Dome show where just watching Goldberg's entrance and then you hear guys like, oh, he doesn't know how to work. It's like, what is the goal at the end of the day of this business? Because I'm watching a guy in front of a 41,000 people going insane for this guy.
A little bit of Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Like, Under I just, I don't know. Like, at the end of the day,
you can't have...
This is about guys that get reactions and sell tickets.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And this guy was incredibly hot at this point. I would say on this particular night, I would definitely say he was more over than Steve Austin at the time. I mean, Goldberg transferred over a lot to the sports world as well, because he had that background and got coverage in a lot of different outlets and stuff like that. And I mean, Jesus, it was.
Do you think Bill Goldberg had, you know, let's say the WWE recently got this guy from football and ran with this same gimmick with him today? Do you think this the world would react to him the same way?
Like right now?
Yep.
I think 100% they would. I think if they would book him like that, I mean, they've done it really with Ryback. Look how he's gotten over right now. You would debate, I guess, how over he is, but
yeah,
I think this would work. I mean, it's a presentation that it's really tough for people not to get into, this killer who wins all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very easy.
Well, the way I think why I might just question that is because we have, you know, the internet certainly influenced a big section of the audience. And would the same internet crowd that is so against somebody like a John Cena, would they be influenced in not accepting this guy because they know that he can't have that match, because they know of his actual limitations?
No, I don't think so. Because, I mean, there was no internet, as you bring up with Hogan in the 80s. But, I mean, Jesus Christ, every fan was just – they knew Hogan was terrible. And I just think that's not a significant amount of the audience that's going to make that difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just don't think it does. Sure, that kind of – I think the volume is louder with the internet, but I don't think it would have played any difference in this.
And I will say that despite him not being able to, like, you know, screwing shit up like an Irish whip, for instance, the five moves that he could do, he made them look incredibly great. And probably because they felt really real. But he made everything that he could do.
And he had this intensity that really, to me, sold his whole persona. That, yeah. I mean, compare it to when they were trying to push Ezekiel Jackson last year as a comparison. I mean, he was given quick wins over guys. Didn't work. So, yeah. I mean, it's not like this gimmick is a surefire thing. It's also got to be a guy that's got to do some of the work.
Yep.
I think it's why Ryback has been able to get it over, and you know, the certain things
Although
that have connected with
people. I wouldn't put those two on the same level in terms of physical charisma.
No, but I think you can't deny Ryback does have some.
He's got a great looking finisher. Aside from that, I don't know. I don't know if there's that much else.
You don't get into that big snarl
and
the pink eye,
the waving of the arms.
People get into that way when he does that. That was always – that killed those Goldberg chants in a match. When he would do that
– I think it looks so stupid. He's like – when he does that, it looks like one of those action figures, the Hasbro WWE figures where the move is to – I don't even know what the fuck this move is.
Wow,
you fucking swing your arms like that up and down.
To be fair, I mean, let's compare it to John Cena waving his hand in front of his face.
There's a purpose.
Randy Orton – separating his shoulders.
Yeah, but those look kind of cool. Those, like, this guy, just Ryback, when he does that, he looks like a guy who can't completely lift his arms over his head.
Remember when Kurt Angle would do, when he'd take the straps down, and then he would, like, have, like, some, like, remember when he'd stomp up and down, like, he's having a hissy fit?
Yeah.
And it would get the audience into things. I mean, it's weird shit that gets over, you know what I mean? Like,
but the way, I don't know, to me, the waving of the arms, it just shows the lack of mobility in this guy's arms. Shoulders.
It's tough. It's tough to get those arms up sometimes in a straight line.
Uh-huh.
All right. More Nitro girls who are basically dancing on top of the announcers at the desk.
Including Mrs. Hickenbottom here behind Tony Schiavone.
Yes. We got Psicosis against Juventud Guerrera, which goes to show the depth here at this time. I mean, how great would it be if we got like a lucha match every week on Raw? You know what I mean?
I know. Yeah.
I would love this if we got variety more.
Absolutely.
It's like, one thing I really missed. Like in WWE, it's always really been hit upon that you work WWE style, and you never heard that term WCW style because there were so many different variations. Like you could come in and you could work a lucha style, you could work
ECW,
a Japanese style junior heavyweight fight as well. Like with Benoit and Otani when they would have their matches and such.
Yep.
There was a lot of different variety that I don't see as much in WWE. And that's one thing I think that would pace the three-hour Raws a lot more if you had more variety.
Completely agree. I completely agree. It was at a point like this where, like, even though this was a three-hour show, I mean, you just saw a Bill Goldberg match versus Scott Hall where the audience erupted. But then you're following it up. You know, usually on WWE, if you're going to follow up something that big, you'd see some throwaway hardcore match or maybe like a Divas match. Here you're being presented with Hoovy versus Psicosis. I mean, for a filler match, yes, please. Yeah.
And even after Goldberg Hall, here we are with 1 hour to go. Still to come, Sting, Lex Luger, The Giant, DDP. Yeah. And it was just going on and on and on. Just about the, like, you can debate whether you're a fan of some of these guys in the ring. They were stars at this point. I mean, there were a lot of stars on this roster that, you know, when they moved to 3 hours, numbers actually went up for Nitro. So interesting to look at in history. Anyway, Hoovy and Psicosis here. Tilt-a-whirl leg scissors by Hoovy, and then hits a top rope Hurricane Rana as he jumps into mid-ring, hitting this onto Psicosis, and then a tope con hilo to the floor. And you know what this was met by, Way?
Heenan.
Why? Why would you do that? Oh, I hated the commentary during some of these matches at the time, where they would either laugh or they would just... It was just terrible. It was everything that announcers are not supposed to be. They took away instead of enhanced these matches.
That's a question that you and I should be asking. Why would you throw somebody through two tables? Why would you put somebody through a folding chair, unfolded chair? but not for the announcer of the product to do. I agree.
We saw a springboard sunset flip that Psicosis rolled through and sent Hoovy to the floor. Psicosis off the top rope with a senton onto the floor onto Juventud Guerrera, and then gets a two count in the ring. Hoovy then lands on his feet after a release German suplex, and then hits the Hoovy driver, sets up the 450 splash as the Flock is walking out. Hoovy hits the 450, pins Psychosis at 317. I thought a great 3 minute and 17 second match.
Yeah.
And then the Flock runs in, attacks both guys. This was a staple of the cruiserweight division. Have a great match, and then have both guys just get obliterated. And
then
they just cut away. Like, there was no angle here. There was nothing. I had no idea what was going on.
Oh, it's just the Flock. They're just attacking people. There's nothing you need to care about. Here, in fact, to show you how much we don't care about the Flock, let's follow up that segment with this one. A recap of Goldberg defeating Raven.
Killing our leader to go 75-0 and win the United States title.
Why do this run-in? Is this a complete joke?
Why?
Why? Yes.
Then, this was something I enjoyed. Tony Schiavone, plugged the L.A. Melee 1998. To the best of my knowledge, maybe the first ever, not iPay-per-view, but iBroadcast on WCWWrestling.com from the Great Western Forum. They never explained what this was or the fact that they pronounced melee as melee to, I guess, roll off the tongue better after L.A. Melee 98. Tune in Friday night at WCWWrestling.com. I don't know if this was the house show. I don't know what this was, but they plugged it.
How
I wonder if they had tech problems.
I wonder how good streaming video was back then. But I mean, I remember being on the internet back then. I don't remember streaming too much video.
I remember I used to, when I got the internet, which would have been the end of 98.
Like 98,
I would listen to WWF Fight This.
So you would have. A lot of people. That. Sorry, most people would have still had dial-up.
I think everyone had dial-up at this point.
Yeah, and so I don't know how good, how capable the computers were even of streaming a pay-per-view.
Yeah. Do you remember when the
Real Player was the only thing at the time?
Do you remember picking up your phone and you'd hear the connection sound and you couldn't use the phone? Think about that. In our lifetime, there was a point where using the internet meant you couldn't use your phone at the same time.
In our lifetime, there was no – before, there was a time when there was no internet.
It's nuts. My brother would always do that. I'd be on the internet, and then when he wanted me to get off, he'd take the fucking plug out of the wall where it would attach on the second floor, and then I'd be disconnected, and then I'd give up and leave. And then he'd steal the internet.
Wow.
And terrible. Then he'd stay on it for hours. We had to share the internet. I was like, oh. Him and I grew to, like, really have a lot of dissension over the internet.
I'm sure a lot of families have been broken because of having to share the internet.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Now I get this, the fucking internet everywhere. I get it.
It's everywhere. You can't avoid it.
Yeah.
Free Wi-Fi and all these places.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Today, an L.A. melee might really be a success.
Yeah.
Maybe if ROH goes to LA, there's your title for you.
Yeah.
Okay, enough of this. They show a video on the Bash at the Beach main event, calling it the match of the summer. And it focuses on all the mainstream press they received. And they actually mention how Hogan was looking for a big payday on this show.
They even showed dollar signs. They flashed up dollar signs.
Talk about a shoot here. Yeah. And they mentioned that Dennis Rodman, his experience advantage could be the difference. Rodman having one match, Karl Malone having none.
No, it is. It is a good plot point.
Unfortunately, they didn't bank on the fact Dennis Rodman would show up in no condition to perform that Sunday and would pass out falling asleep on the ring apron.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. That's a show we should do one day.
Oh, yeah, we should.
Bash at the Beach and Dennis Rodman falling asleep. We did review his final encounter with Randy Savage, that Road Wild.
Yeah, we have.
Terrible show.
Which I don't remember.
That's better. Jim Duggan against the Giant. This is crazy how long Paul White's been in this business when you think about it.
Yeah.
Like 95 he debuted. How 17 would, years ago.
How old would he have been at this point?
He's in his 40s now.
I don't know. He would have been in his 20s.
He was
early to mid 20s.
How old do you think he is right now? I would guess 41.
Yeah, sure. Maybe 39.
He is 40.
Oh, he's 40.
40 years old.
Yeah.
Trained by Larry Sharp, Jim Duggan, and Glenn Ruth.
Hey, there you go.
Glenn Ruth. Headbanger Mosh.
Hey, you have teacher versus student here on Nitro.
Wow, I never knew that. Oh. Paul White has also gone on record as saying when he went into the WWF, he was afraid to say he was never trained properly.
He was afraid to say that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he ended up going down to OVW and realizing I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, this guy,
right.
This guy's just thrown on TV. Like,
mm-hmm.
really?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So we had Duggan and Paul White here. Duggan attacks as Paul White is entering the ring, and the Giant then hits a big boot, hit these terrible kicks in the corner, and then starts gyrating as he goes to hit him with his ass, and Duggan moves out of the way. The Giant blocks a body slam, then misses an elbow drop, takes a running clothesline, and takes Giant off his feet, but then the Giant stops a knee drop and choke slams Duggan for the win, 2 minutes and 9 seconds. And the Giant gets on the mic.
I loved how the Giant blocked that knee drop of Duggan's.
Yes.
His back is on the mat flat. Duggan's about to drop his knee. And Giant just extends his arm up to block it. Yeah, like it, into a fist.
Effective.
Yeah. I don't know if the physics of that work.
Yeah, I don't know. He's big, I guess.
Duggan's a 300-pound man.
We should ask Elliot. Maybe he would know the dynamics of being on your back and averting pressure downward motion.
Yeah, is this part of the curriculum?
Like maybe.
Extend your arm up to block a jumping attacker.
So the Giant calls Kevin Green, who was a football player at the time with the Carolina Panthers and was doing stuff at WCW, a gutless yellow coward. And he wants Kevin Green in a singles match and will choke slam him. And Kevin Green is there. And he comes out and spits in the face of the Giant, ducks a clothesline, and then clotheslines the Giant to the floor, grabs the 2x4, and he was fired up.
This Kevin
More
Green.
Sports Center for Wei Ting here.
Yeah, I wish I watched football and like NASCAR and basketball so I could be able to understand this pro wrestling show.
Kevin Green was like a legit player. He wasn't just some like scrub.
He was in a Mongo Mongo McMahon.
Yeah.
Well, yes, Kevin
Big
Green
player.
Here. He was just freaking out. Like
he was excited.
He was very excited, more so than many. He was like Ultimate Warrior excited.
Kevin Green is now 50. Wrestling career. Green had a couple of short stints in WCW. He debuted as a tag partner of fellow alum Steve McMichael, but McMichael turned on him in favor of joining the Horsemen. He then made a final return in mid-98, teaming with former star Bill Goldberg against the NWO Black and White.
Oh, there you go.
Green left wrestling when NFL teams began requiring a no-wrestling clause in his contract. Please, spare us, Kevin.
Fuck, he was about to burst a blood vessel here.
He was
Come
excited.
Come on!
He was also wearing these, like, dress shoes with no socks on.
Dress shoes without socks. Yeah, it's a bad
like
look.
Like loafers without socks. Looked very casual.
Maybe he had, like, ankle socks.
No, he did not.
Okay.
Another Karl Malone promo, and he does the Diamond Cutter sign. I hope Jay-Z wasn't watching this.
Yeah.
Actually, no. It should be the other way around. DDP had the ownership of this, right?
Yeah.
Specific use to Karl. Then we had Jim the Anvil Neidhart against Diamond Dallas Page. Oh, how the mighty had fallen in Jim the Anvil Neidhart. This was after the Survivor Series 97, hooked up with WCW along with the British Bulldog and was in undercard purgatory here.
Mm.
Karl Malone comes out alongside DDP. Neidhart hit him with forearms in the corner. Page gets up and responds with shots in the corner, bunch of knees. Then Neidhart hits a low blow as the ref's back is turned. Neidhart applies a full Nelson, and then DDP hits a low blow, calls for the Diamond Cutter, hits it, pins him clean, 221, and DDP and Malone climb into the crowd. So just a setup match for DDP to look good going into the pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Neidhart was your setup guy.
Yeah. Brett at this time was injured. What was going on?
Brett at this point, I don't think he was injured. I just think he wasn't being used.
Huh.
Yeah, I think he was around at this point. I think he'd be on TV shortly after this. I think, in fact, he might have even been on that pay-per-view.
Bash at the Beach?
I think so. I've got to imagine that Jim Neidhart, throughout this match, he's just thinking that, man, I worked WrestleMania 6, and this guy drove the honky-tonk man's drove him in a Cadillac to the ring.
That's right.
And here I am losing to this fucking guy. Where have I fucking fallen to? So that was the state of Jim Neidhart at this time. Probably in hindsight, not happy at the fact that he decided to leave WWF, but obviously a period in his time he would rather forget.
I don't know if he would have been done any better in the WWF.
Yeah, that's probably too. You remember he stuck around for like a week or so after the Montreal incident where DX, they like had him join and then they just low blowed him or something on TV. They had China just give him a low blow. Yes, I looked at, I was stalling here. Booker T versus Bret Hart at Bash at the Beach that Sunday.
Oh, okay.
For the TV title.
All right.
Guess Bret's fortunes weren't that great either after WWF here.
You wouldn't have known watching this.
No, no Bret on this show. No room for him. Got to get Psychosis on there. Then they show the video of Goldberg going to 100-0 defeating Conan at the Great American Bash.
Yep.
You're not impressed.
No, I am. I just laugh because every time I watch a Conan match now, I just think, does anybody want to go faster?
Does anybody want to go backwards?
Yeah. The MLW podcast is just
you have
my new addiction.
You have like blown through these shows over the last few weeks.
They are so entertaining because like this guy just doesn't give a fuck, Conan. He'll just say whatever he wants, and he's just hilarious.
It's refreshing to hear like there's people who will be like, you know, they want to be careful what they say. You're right, Conan just doesn't care.
Yeah,
and it makes for entertaining radio.
Yeah, and you know, he has very good insight into the current product too. But just the way he talks, he's very entertaining.
We should have him on sometime.
That would be
great.
Review
a show with us.
MLW podcast. So where can people download that?
You can go to MLW.com. Our pal Court Bauer, Mr. St. Laurent, and of course Conan.
Yeah,
so Way's favorite on there.
Yeah, they're all great, but yeah, Conan's very good.
NWO Wolfpack comes out. Kevin Nash, Lex Luger, Sting, and Conan. My God, I've never seen two white guys, in particular Kevin Nash, try so hard here in Nash and Luger. Kevin Nash had like the backwards like bandana on that Hall would wear. Like, for some reason, Scott Hall could pull off that look a lot easier than Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash looked like he was doing a parody of somebody. But no, he was just trying to be over here. I thought he looked such a loser.
No, they both like Tupac, from what
DMX.
I mean. Yeah.
Heenan said he... I like Conan's serape.
The NWO serape.
If ever there was more of a disconnect. I just looked at Conan here. It's like, what did he think here as he's out with these guys?
He's thinking, like, I'm actually getting a push. This is great.
Oh, my
hey,
God.
Hey, let these guys pretend to be a gangster.
Fat Lanta
is what Kevin Nash says.
Conan here did his catchphrase, and this was for Sting and Lex Luger taking on the daunting tandem of Billy Kidman and Sick Boy Scott Vick.
Oh,
Scott Vick,
there you go.
Luger, now you want to describe his ring attire?
Well, I don't exactly remember it. Well, he was wearing an NWO tank top, wasn't he?
And black jeans and, like, construction boots.
They weren't cut off.
No, they were full-length jeans.
Yeah.
They take out the heels right away. Sting splashes both of them in the corner, hits the death drop to Kidman as Luger puts Sick Boy in the torture rack for a huge win in 28 seconds.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
Great. That's your night's work. Thanks a lot for coming out. Great. They show a highlight of
their
Goldberg.
Their entrance lasted longer than this match.
Yeah. Highlight was they show a highlight video of Goldberg defeating Scott Hall like 5 minutes earlier. Goldberg does his big entrance for the main event. They go to break with the entire crowd chanting Goldberg. I loved these transitions to break where the announcers just cut out and they faded out to Goldberg chants, like deafening chants of Goldberg.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you possibly be tuning away here?
Yeah, yeah, it felt like something really special was happening. How could you? I would pay for this. I would pay $40 for this.
I think a lot of people would have paid $40 for this match. Hogan comes out saying, I'm going to kick Goldberg's butt. Edgy.
Yeah, he's always...
Broken bones rule. Maybe the Hogan came up with that.
Yeah, well, he's always seemed to have safety and...
concerns of the children on his mind.
Oh, definitely. 2012 has definitely shown that to us. He's always worried about what his younger audience thinks of him.
I would say so.
So we got Hulk Hogan and Bill Goldberg, for whatever reason, on free television for the WCW title.
I was wondering what the main opposing main event on Raw was. And
What was it?
I looked it up. It was Kane versus The Undertaker versus Mankind for the number one contendership for Steve Austin's title. And Undertaker didn't show up, and so it was just Kane versus
Mankind.
Maybe
he was out with Rodman.
Maybe, yes. So it was Kane versus Mankind in the main event. Kane pins Mankind and then takes off his mask to reveal that it was The Undertaker.
Oh!
So that was the main event.
Wow. So maybe Kane was with Rodman.
Yes.
Can make it an easy joke there. Never mind.
What's the joke?
Yeah, I'm not going to
make it.
I don't want to be
I don't know what you're alluding to.
I forgot. It's not that funny, to be honest. I'm just backtracking. Okay. This quarter hour for Goldberg and Hogan did a 6.91.
Wow.
Over 5 million homes were tuned in. This Nitro actually did a 4.93 to Raw's 4.0. So they beat Raw. They can say in history, we beat them on July the 6th of 98.
Yep.
At the cost of whatever. So here we go. I mean, in terms of it, if you're going to do this on free television, at least they did this properly. I mean, this built up all show long.
Yeah.
Built up to a climax on the show. Fans were going nuts here as this match began. Tanay states once again here, WCW is number three under the Wolfpack in Hollywood, but Goldberg winning this could really change the balance of power. Great to hear your WCW announcers put your own product over so strong. They did a test of strength won by Goldberg. Hogan got out, raked the back, did all his heel tactics, whipped them with his belt. Goldberg took it away and tossed the belt to the floor. Hogan then clotheslined Goldberg and choked him, and then he got up. Goldberg clotheslines Hogan as he rolls to the floor. All very basic stuff, but crowd was eating it all up. Hogan sends him to the floor, hits him with some chair shots. They come back into the ring, hits the leg drop three times, and they cut away for the third one as Carl Malone and, first Kurt Hennig is coming down, and DDP and Malone once again come from behind, and they take out Kurt Hennig, and this leads to Malone hitting a diamond cutter to Kurt Hennig. Goldberg recovers from the leg drop, spears Hogan, hits the jackhammer. The crowd was, like, losing their shit here as Goldberg pinned him 8 minutes and 11 seconds. This was a phenomenal reaction and great post-match. Goldberg is holding both titles up that he has won, and it went off feeling like you saw the most monumental moment in Nitro history.
Yes, absolutely. This crowd, I think, made this match. And, of course, you know, the streak helped, of course, as well. What I'm trying to say is this match... This was a nothing match. In terms of that, technically, this was garbage. This was a typical Hulk Hogan-style matchup. And, what is that you're showing me?
This is the newest T-shirt on Barbershop Window. One Man Gangnam Style.
Huh.
Very clever.
That's pretty funny.
Very clever. Barbershop Window.
Yeah, but this match was a typical Hogan match with all the shortcuts.
And it didn't matter. This is a great lesson in pro wrestling. If people are so invested in two characters, I'm sorry. A great wrestling match, listen, I'd love a great wrestling match over a bad wrestling match. This was not a great match. Hogan and Andre wasn't a great match, but you know what? This crowd was so into these characters that the average fan doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, that's true. But you can't have one and not the other. You need to have your good wrestling on a show, too.
Oh, sure, on a show. But you know what? That wasn't the calling card of this. And you know what?
Yeah.
The majority of people, they're not buying pay-per-views because it's great wrestling matches. It's because of stories, of characters, of the idea of seeing a guy like Goldberg crowned as champion.
Yes. And these people got that, and it was a great moment in WCW history.
You don't want to litter your show with this. Of course. You need your workers. You need to present a show. But Hulk Hogan being a great worker is not part of his deal.
But you can't say it wouldn't have added to this. You know, let's say you had Brian versus Punk with this level of heat. It would be a much more memorable event.
I thought this was pretty damn memorable. I think if you were to ask any WCW fan, name your top three Nitro moments, this is being named in every one of them.
Okay.
This was a huge moment in WCW history.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe the last great moment in WCW history. No, the Horseman reunion was a few months
ago. I think it would depend on the type of audience that you would ask. what people value.
I am going to ask everyone right now, post on the thread for this on our Law message board your top three Nitro moments. I don't want Thunder or pay-per-views. Top three Nitro moments. I'm curious. I like doing these questions on the threads. Mm-hmm. So post them up, and maybe we'll go through some of them next week. But that was Nitro. Interesting how you grade this show, Wei, because for one night, incredible show. Some would maybe say one of the best Nitros they ever produced. But at the same time, looking at this long term, this was like doing, for instance, if they were to have done Austin versus Shawn Michaels with Mike Tyson on Raw, I'm sure it would have been memorable. But what did you cost yourselves? Mm-hmm. Starrcade, to me, of 98 was a disaster in hindsight. And had they had more patience and built to this instead of a half a week build, this was like, this could have been their first million buy show, I really believe. They were still really hot after this, even with some of the blunders they made in the months following this. I think this could have been a gigantic Starrcade event, main event. And kept building Goldberg up to the title match at the end of the year.
Right. Well, what do you grade it based on that?
I can't be too negative on this show because I very much enjoyed this show. I'm going to give this one a 9 out of 10. Only not giving it a 10 because of the long-term foresight that I have to give. I can't just grade this on a one-night-only basis. I have to look at what could have been. This could have been even bigger.
Yes, it could have. I give it about an 8. I thought it was a very entertaining show. The way I look at these is just how entertained I was throughout. And at no point did I feel like this show dragged at all for 3 hours.
No, not at all. I thought it was quite the contrast to...
Even the loser matches. It was Scott Putski.
Oh.
By the way, who do you award that?
Oh, you're right. The Scott Putski Award. Let's see. On this show, I mean, Luger was looking robust as always. As I look up and down here, Wei, I mean, like, who stands out for you in terms of... we got Putski, we got Luger. You know what? There wasn't really any crazy Ric Fuller.
Buff Bagwell was in a...
Yeah, you know what? Out of sentimentality, the fact Luger really was not even in much of a match, let's go with the namesake of Scott Putski. Okay. I don't feel he was at ground zero levels, though. He didn't look like he had baby oiled himself up, which I think enhances the Putskiness.
Sure.
Congratulations. Scott Putski wins the Scott Putski Award.
Congratulations, Scott.
Making this a memorable Nitro.
Yeah, two-time winner.
All right. Well, those were our thoughts on Nitro from July the 6th of 98. And now we're going to head over.
Well, the whole reason, John, why we decided to review the show is because of that Ryback build. And how would you compare the two? How would you compare this build to Bill Goldberg's title win and to Ryback's first title match coming up this weekend?
Well, I don't think we will be able to replicate this kind of scene on Sunday at Hell in a Cell.
Right.
No, I feel this is very far off. I mean, Goldberg, this scenario just was so well put together, where he's in Atlanta in a giant dome for this crowning moment where I don't think too many people argued that Goldberg was ready to have the title put on him. I'm sure there were at the time. But even if you were to play up all night long of Ryback and his whole streak and... If you were to beat Punk, I'm sure it'd be a monstrous reaction on Sunday, but no way are you replicating what this was.
Yeah.
I don't think you can. And that's not a knock on what they're doing now. It's just this was the Goldberg thing. It's so
Goldberg at
ingrained.
This time was already the biggest star in the company despite not having a title. Whereas Ryback, you are really using the title to elevate him to that next level. And that's why I don't think it'll... I don't know. I don't have high hopes for that. For the whole thing.
We're now going to shift on over to your feedback, which you can always leave at lawradio.proboards.com. And we start things off with Trent Scott. I was quite excited when I heard this was going to be the next review you guys were going to do because I remember watching this match as an 8-year-old kid completely supporting Goldberg. It still amazes me that this would be the only time Goldberg became WCW champion. He was so over with the fans, it was almost like Punk at Money in the Bank last year. I was always firmly behind WCW in the Monday Night Wars, and watching this gave me a great sense of nostalgia for the good days of WCW as opposed to the Russo clusterfuck that was reviewed a few weeks ago. I definitely wish that WCW was still around today, but it's nice to know how easy it is to pull up the old stuff on YouTube like this. Actually, we have reviewed the Halloween Havoc 99 where they did the Dusty finish where Goldberg won the title, and then the next night on Nitro they announced it was vacant when he beat Sting.
We go to our next reviewer who says, I was in attendance for the show, and it was the most fun and exciting show I've ever been to. Goldberg was incredibly over, as with most of the Georgia Dome fans. He had played football for the Georgia Bulldogs and the Atlanta Falcons. This may have been the closest WCW ever came to creating a CM Punk / Money in the Bank moment, though WCW gave it away on live TV with minimal advertising and no build-up. This Nitro has a mixed legacy. It provided WCW with one of its biggest moments, but it is probably the biggest example of hot-shotting in wrestling history. They could have made huge money having the first Hogan-Goldberg match on pay-per-view. Since I was part of this exciting atmosphere, I'll give the show 9 jackhammers out of 10.
Okay, we go to Danny Hernandez here. For the people that say they should have saved the Hogan-Goldberg title match for a pay-per-view, well, WCW sold 35,000 tickets on 3 days' notice as the match was announced on Thunder. I say they made $970,000 at the gate and equal to that with the Malone-Rodman pay-per-view that Sunday as pay-per-view buys. I hope when you review the show, you see it as a go-home show for a pay-per-view. For a three-hour show, it didn't seem to drag too much. Jericho, Dillon, and the Dean Malenko segment was great. Hogan yelling at the top of his lungs was great. Wolfpack were over huge. Alex Wright and Disco Inferno tag team. That's all he says. DDP and Karl Malone promo. The greatest camera angle in the history of wrestling for the jackhammer. I give the show 10 flying toilet papers out of 10.
Oh, we forgot to mention, yeah, this crowd was... A lot of people were throwing garbage in the ring when Goldberg won.
Well, that was a staple for main events in WCW. One thing I want to make clear here. They did not put tickets on sale at Thunder. Tickets had been on sale for quite a while at this point, and they had actually sold 35,000 by the time this match was announced.
There's no way you'd be able to sell 39,000 tickets or 41,000
tickets. No, you don't put tickets on sale 5 days before a show. So, yes, there were some late tickets. They sold 6,000 more tickets after this match was announced, which, I mean, you can argue.
But that's not the intent, though, I don't think. Their intent wasn't to draw a house. It was to get ratings, wasn't it?
The ratings were the giant reason here. They knew they had a big house, and a lot of people speculated that was a huge reason why Hogan wanted to be on this show, because it was a guaranteed giant gate for the company, and they had sold so many tickets at this point. Listen, no one's denying this was a great show the way it turned out, but the fact is, you could have had this full dome. You could have done Bill Goldberg against, say, a Randy Savage or something, do his biggest match to date, which also would have got huge reaction, and save your money match, Goldberg and Hogan. Like, that was the match. There was really nowhere to go for Goldberg after that, and that was really evidenced during his title run where he was not booked as the top guy. He did not go, he worked a tag match at that Bash at the Beach. He worked a battle royal underneath at the Road Wild show. He didn't even work the Fall Brawl show, as I can imagine, or at least remember. He didn't close Halloween Havoc. Or he may have. He worked DDP. I can't remember what went on last, that or Hogan Warrior. But it's not like he was booked as the guy
that
even
went,
after.
No, that went last. That was the show that got cut off.
Did Hogan
off.
Warrior go on last?
No.
Okay, DDP Goldberg and DDP went on last.
Because it got cut off.
Yeah, okay. Remember. So there. He went on last at Halloween Havoc. Anyway, that's my thought process was this legitimately probably cost the company $7 million on paper in profit. So, I mean, you can't dispute that fact.
We got Remdog, who wants to chime in, and he says, I remember the show. I waited for this night. My nephew and I had a party because we knew this night would be special. There was no way Goldberg could lose, but also, Hogan was going down. The third reason being that we finally have a Jewish world champion. I do not know if he was the first, and Kane would come later, so we majorly marked out.
All right,
have there been no Jewish world champions prior?
Jewish world champions. Not in WCW.
Oh, wow. Not even WWE.
I'd have to think.
Interesting.
We go to Corey Ferreira. One of the biggest mistakes WCW made was not doing this match on pay-per-view and giving it away for free on Nitro. To me, it shows how scared they were of the WWF beating them in the ratings now, when a year earlier they could care less about the WWF catching them. As for the actual moment this show is known for, Goldberg was easily the biggest star they had at the time, and right on the heels of Austin in terms of biggest wrestling star in the world. Goldberg was made on this night. He beats Hogan in the Georgia Dome in front of 40,000 strong and wins the world title, only for them to fuck up a surefire thing by the start of the next year.
Our next piece of feedback comes from Alan Laycock, who says, I remember living in Norway when this Nitro aired live. As you can imagine, professional wrestling is not too big over there, despite Thor's occasional emails. So I remember following the events of this episode online through the Law's website, which I believe was known back then as Over the Top Rope. Though I could be wrong. Is that true?
I don't know.
Anyways, I remember the dirt sheets at the time calling this Goldberg's biggest challenge to date, and most were skeptical about him going over. I was really into the push, though, and I thought that WCW would pull the trigger. Still, it was interesting that he pinned Hogan clean in less than 10 minutes. A match of this magnitude was usually a 20 to 30 minute affair, as it still would be today. And this was actually the first time I had ever seen the match, but that in itself typifies Goldberg's meteoric rise in popularity. A lot of his legend was built on word of mouth and hype, and you could see that even with a slightly overbooked finish, that the fans still went mental when he won. Goldberg just wasn't an in-ring talent. He had a whole aura about him that extended well beyond what occurred in the ring.
All right, and we go then to Paul Ellett from the UK. I always get the feeling that even at its peak, WCW was never really that huge beyond America, and that the rest of the world was always a WWF territory. Please correct me if I'm wrong from your experience in Canada. Something which stands out is how a brand with such strong southern elements running through it was the most popular wrestling company throughout America. WWF / WWE, like most entertainment staples, seemed big time because of its northern roots and proximity to New York. The show's main positive was a packed roster of main eventers like Goldberg, Sting and Hogan, an undercard of solid workers like Jericho and Raven, and those extras you forget were in WCW like Neidhart and Swinger. You can tell how wary WCW was of the television audience switching channels by featuring all this talent in short segments, scattering them throughout the show. Hogan, Goldberg, Jericho, Malenko, DDP, and Malone, all appearing and reappearing. Building to later segments also seemed a priority, with Hall and Bagwell getting the arriving at the building treatment. Having Goldberg appear twice and give the audience more of what they wanted seemed to be the company's philosophy, even if they lost out on potential pay-per-view buys. The commentary team and crowd added so much to this main event. Karl Malone looks like a vertically stretched Cleveland from Family Guy, and NWO Wolfpack remains one of the oddest groups in the history of this great sport. No one seemed to have anything in common with each other, like Sting bopping to hip-hop music with Conan just months after Starrcade 97. 6.5 out of 10. How would you talk about it in terms of WCW? I mean, they were, WWF was always, especially in Canada, even when their business went really down, their house show business in Canada always remained pretty consistent. And I think, just speaking Toronto here, Nitro had that, their first time they came to Toronto with Nitro in 1999. I mean, it was an instant sellout. But it was always, the WWF just ran here a lot more. They had a Canadian office here. They had regular dates in Toronto. And I think there was a bit more, I can only speak of Toronto, much more entrenched in the WWF product, even during the down period, which was the period where Bret Hart was heavily focused upon. And he was that Canadian star that didn't necessarily transfer that over to WCW when they got him. And that was their hope, was that he would be their big gateway star, but look at this Nitro, for instance. It's not like he was presented as one of the players at this point.
I think the TV is an issue, and just the history of the promotion with its roots so much further south. I mean, you had you had the Jack Tunney connection up here in Canada, and but the reason why I think Nitro drew so well when it came up here is just because of the hunger. I mean, fans, there's a lot of hunger for pro wrestling here of any type. I mean, look at how well ECW did here, and how often did we get ECW TV, I guess, in the history of the promotion, right?
Up until the summer of 99, you didn't get any of it. We never got hardcore TV or anything like that, so you really had to seek it out.
This town is a real combat sports loving town, and to have one of the biggest companies come up to do a show, a lot of people are going to be interested, obviously. Finally, our last piece of feedback. There were so many little things I completely forgot about WCW in its heyday. Public Enemy, NWO Sting, Raven's Lackey with the sign, and Larry Zbyszko thinking people actually liked him. This was a good wrestling show. Today's promotions could learn a thing or two by watching reruns of themselves.
All right.
Hey, is Randy Savage Jewish?
Yes. I think he is. I'm really, I believe so. We need to settle this to avoid issues. Randy Savage. I don't know.
Randall Mario Poffo, better known by his ring name, Macho
Man.
Yeah,
mother
Randy
was
Savage.
Jewish. His mother was Jewish.
All right, there you go.
There you go. All right, going to wrap things up now. Thanks to everyone for your feedback. You can always leave it at lawradio.proboards.com, including next week's show, Way. Where we are going to review what?
Next week's show falls on the date of Halloween 2012.
Whoa!
So let's travel back 21 years. Halloween Havoc, 1991.
The Chamber of Horrors match.
Chamber of Horrors.
Largely regarded as one of the greatest matches of all time.
Is that right, John?
5 stars, most would give it.
I cannot wait.
Abdullah the Butcher's one and only. Major pay-per-view he ever did. He never worked a WWF pay-per-view and only worked one WCW pay-per-view.
Nice.
Yeah. So there you go. That'll be next week. We'll take a look down memory lane at WCW in 1991, right after Ric Flair had left. A fun time in WCW history. We'll see how that compares to their Georgia Dome Nitro. On our way out here, first of all, you can always check out liveaudiowrestling.com for all of your news. Follow Way on Twitter at Way0937. Tell him how much of a fan you are of him. He always likes interacting and hearing from the people.
You say that so sarcastically.
I didn't mean it. I know, like, it came out sarcastically.
You're mocking.
No, I mean that seriously. Exalt him.
Okay.
Exalt.
All right.
All right. And you can follow myself at I Am John Pollock. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Review and Impact. And lots more to come, including Halloween Havoc 1991 next week, where me and Way are going to do the podcast dressed in costume.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
What are you dressing as?
I'm not going to tell you yet.
Okay.
Maybe a Tony Schiavone Phantom of the Opera.
Ooh.
Get up.
Wow.
Lots of ideas. Do you have anything? You should be Ryback.
No.
Way back.
Stop.
All right. We're going to get out of here. And some music to take us out here. Boy, what really screams
1998?
Yeah. Well, I have no idea.
What were you listening to in 1998?
You know what? The first song that comes to mind is Tony Schiavone yelling at the top of his lungs that Bill Goldberg is on top of the world. So maybe let's go out with a little Brandy and Mace.
All right.
Circa 98.
Wow, okay.
With Top of the World.
Going way back.
Oh, yeah. 14 years to be exact. All right, we'll chat with you next week. I went from Helly Hansen to Mini Mansions. The girls in the room were doing belly dances. Half of my advancing, jars from Branson. To make it through my circumstances. But you know I'm wiser now. Move like Kaiser now. Got a butter soft lever just to hide my pound. Got a house in the valley, come and find me now. Got enough dough to buy the town. So I might give a 6 to my chick, Benz to my mom. Crib so big it look like the Cinnagon. Give her a couch just to spill Henny on. And been a don since Lotto's and Benetton. Come on. People say that I'm not the same girl.
right now. Either you wait, the cats who make the hits or the one that see the chip.
Slow down, makes you kill him.
But don't stop it. What's the use of buying a weight if I'ma have to chop it? If it ain't Chris, he won't pop it. If it ain't platinum with ice, he won't rock it. If it don't cost 60, he don't drop it. If it don't come with TVs, he don't cop it.
Either stop it.
Top of the world.